Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Looking forward to talking some summer college baseball with you in some 2013 draft class. Aaron, the two of us don't write up as many of these leagues anymore as much as we edit them all. I think you do. How many of these summer college leagues? Three or four?
I did the, Team USA and Cal Collegiate, Ripken, and Valley.
Right, that's right. I forgot about the USA team. Of course, we're a long way from the halcyon days when you were here and we could do play-by-play and color commentary for USA Baseball, which was that was just one glorious summer of like three games that we did together, right? Was that like two or three games?
Yeah, that's right. That was what was that? 2-3 years ago. That was the year that Sonny Gray threw a combined no hitter with some other guys.
Yeah, and we were on the air together when Anthony Rendon broke his ankle.
That's right.
So that was an unfortunate occurrence. It was fated not to be for us to be America's greatest broadcast team. But we still work a lot on summer college baseball, and it's a fun time of year because I think for all of us, it's kind of like a tune-up for all of our prospect lists in the fall, at least for you and me. But really, the other thing that summer college baseball does is it sets the table for the next year's college season and draft season. And, you know, Aaron, every year scouts complain about the caliber of talent. It's almost like there's just two extremes. The draft class either stinks or it's awesome. But it does feel like the last couple of years really were extremes. 2011 was awesome, and 2012 not so much. However good or not good this year's class is, and it sounds like it's not very good, there's still guys, we're still going to rank guys, and there's still exciting guys to talk about. How much better or worse does this year's college class for 2013 feel compared to 2012, though, in your estimation?
Boy, that's a tough one. I mean, especially since the guy at the top is the same in both cases. It's Mark Appel.
Right.
I think that... it's hard to say. I'm still kind of trying to get a feel for how this one compares. I mean, I think you've got certainly some power arms that we like in this class. I mean, I like Ryan Stanek. Sean Manaea, of course, had a fantastic summer in the Cape, and to me, he feels a lot like a Chris Sale kind of a talent. You've got some bats that are interesting, but you don't really have the can't-miss bats in this college class. I mean, I think Colin Moran is really going to hit. He's, that's a guy that the bat feels pretty safe, but... some of the guys with more upside, maybe like a Austin Wilson or a Chris Bryant, there's some more risk with some of those guys. So, the bats, there's really not an up the middle talent that excites you, on the college side, and that to me is a glaring weakness in this class. Who's the top shortstop in this class right now, John? I don't know. I mean,
yeah, there's no Devin Marrero like there was in 2012.
Exactly. So that to me is a real hole with this class. You look at what Team USA ended up with at shortstop. I mean, there's a reason they had Kyle Farmer as a rising senior playing every day at shortstop, and your backup guy is Adam Frazier, who I like as a college player. He's got some quick twitch to him, and he can run, and he's a solid little player, but he's undersized, and he's not, he's probably a second baseman in pro ball. And I don't know that the bat will carry him to the big leagues anyway, so there's just really a lack of those up-the-middle guys.
And then the other problem to me, Aaron, and we're making it sound like this is not a good class, and I guess we're providing evidence that it's not a great class. To me, the other thing that's really missing is right-handed pitching.
Yeah.
And right-handed starting pitching, and you look at the 2010 draft, and you see the unsigned high school players, and you're like, oh, there's Carson Whitson, right-handed pitcher, went to college. Hey, there's Dylan Covey, right-handed pitcher, went to college. You think to yourself, okay, this should be pretty good. There's two guys who were first-round picks in high school who went to college. And, Carson Whitson had a, frankly, brutal sophomore year where he, because of a tired arm and his own performance, did not earn more innings. He had the dead arm, and then when he got back, he just wasn't good enough to pitch for Florida. And that's different from other places because Florida's pitching depth was, outstanding. But he just wasn't good enough. And Dylan Covey obviously has extenuating circumstances with the diabetes, but he has not had a consistent or really good college career to this point. So, two guys who a couple of years ago you thought would be the top guys are not. And right now, you know, going back to that USA team, which I guess we'll kind of start off with, that top 20 you did, Ryan Stanek. I mean, Ryan Stanek's right there. He's probably the best college right-hander for the 2013 draft class. Is that, that's a true statement. Is it not even the unsigned third-round pick? He's right there, isn't he?
Yeah, it's him or Appel. And, you know, you can kind of toss a coin in those two guys. I mean, I think Appel's probably a little bit more polished, but doesn't
cleaner
have...
arm. Cleaner arm action.
Yes, but I don't think the stuff is as electric as Stanek's stuff. I mean,
I agree.
I think Stanek has real swing and miss stuff. He can miss bats with his fastball. He can miss bats with his curveball or his slider. I mean, the guy is his stuff is really really electric. But there are question marks with him because of the delivery and you know there's a little effort there and there's some moving parts and you know is he going to have fine command? I mean, there were people this summer who liked Crawford more than Stanek, and that's
right.
That includes scouts, cross checkers as well as coaches. I mean, you know, Crawford had impressed people a lot this summer. I mean, a lot of people think he's got a real chance to start.
I like Jonathan Crawford. I'm a Jonathan Crawford guy. I haven't been, but I think was it not the Northwoods League last year where Jonathan Crawford really kind of emerged as a dude? I mean, he was a guy out of high school, but he really got some innings last summer, correct?
That's right, exactly. And he actually at that time, I think he was outside the top 10 in the Northwoods, but he was in that next tier of guys, 11 or 12, I think, on that list. And you know, that was – he hadn't emerged yet, but he was coming. And then this spring, it really all came together for him. And, you know, the guy has got a big arm. It's mid-90s, and he's got a good breaking ball, and he's got feel for a changeup. Yeah, there's – you know, there's some herky-jerkiness to the delivery, some funk to it that some scouts don't love. But, you know, I think the package is pretty good. I think he's going to be a good one.
I think the thing is, we look at Jim Callis's Cape top 30, which we'll discuss, but you're on that Team USA top 20, and the one thing USA team really got was arms, right-handed starters. I know he didn't start this summer, but in my mind, if I'm looking at the top starting pitchers who'll be back in college baseball next year besides Mark Appel, Ryan Stanek, Jonathan Crawford, and Bobby Wall of Ole Miss, who's number five on your list for USA team, those are the guys. Am I leaving someone out?
I think you're right. I think those are the guys. You know, I think Wall is another guy.
The best right-handed starter in the Cape was like Aaron Blair out of Marshall, wasn't he? I mean, in terms of performance.
Yeah, in terms of performance, certainly. And you know, and he's more of a pitchability guy. He's good. He's got a good body. You know, he'll be up there in the low 90s at times, but he's not an overpowering guy. I mean, Mike Myers, I think, ranked ahead of him, and Trey Massey, both those guys ranked ahead of him on Jim's list.
Right.
But the other right-handers who were ahead of him were relievers. So you're right. I mean, it's a weak class. The next guy I think that's on the Team USA list is Trevor Williams, who is a guy that I frankly am not completely sold on yet. You know, I think he's got arm strength. He'll run it up to 94, 95, but he doesn't miss a lot of bats. People this summer weren't enamored with him, but he's the next guy by default. So, I mean, that tells you something.
Let's talk about that real quick, Aaron. The USA team came under some fire in 2011, USA Baseball did, for the short duration of the college national team and the lack of quality of its opponents. And it felt like in 2012, USA Baseball really, I thought, addressed those concerns with the five-game series against Cuba. Then they went to Harlem Hawkball Week and played Cuba a couple more times. And, you know, that's a pretty big assignment, pretty big task, and a very good test. That's better competition than you're going to see anywhere else if you're playing Cuba, especially in Cuba.
Yeah.
And next summer's USA team will have a five-game series, the plan is, against Cuba, whether it's here in the Triangle area or whether it's around the rest of the country, whichever it's going to be. That's the plan, see if that gets followed through on. You know, and that's not USA Baseball's concern, that's really Cuba. Whether Cuba shows up or not, to me, is a big question. But it felt like it was an important year for USA Baseball to have that strong schedule. And it feels like, you know, maybe it wasn't the greatest USA team of all time, but it feels like they got most of the top players to go play for them. And like you said, there just weren't a lot of shortstops in this class. You know, and I guess if people haven't followed it, they went to Harlem Honkball Week and what they finished second place in Harlem Honkball. They wound up losing a lot of close games because of their bullpen, basically, against Cuba. To summarize their summer, Successful summer for USA team.
Mixed
summer, it seems like.
Mixed bag. I mean, you know, and the thing that I think those guys are kicking themselves over is they had, you know, one or two more shut down power arms in the bullpen. If they'd gotten a guy like Colby Suggs, for instance, that's exactly the guy they needed. You know,
yep.
They needed that bullpen, you know, bulldog, just come right at you with, here's 96, here's a hammer, you know, try to hit it. They didn't have that. They tried to make a couple of, you know, starting guys into relievers, and Bobby Wall has proven he could do that in the past. He was lights out last summer in a relief role in the Cape, but, you know, he wasn't at full strength this year. The workload kind of got to him, and that hurt them a lot, and that was probably the difference between, you know, a mixed bag summer and a very successful summer, is they just didn't quite have it in the bullpen.
Let's go on to the Cape, because, you know, the Cape Cod League is the granddaddy of them all. It's the gold standard of summer college baseball. Therefore, it gets 30 prospects. We added some video to it this year. If you're not already a subscriber, and if you like the draft, and if subscribers get, 30 scouting reports plus, you know, what do we have, video of like 15, 16 guys?
It might be 20, 22. I think it's more than two-thirds.
It's an impressive display of Baseball America flexibility as we try to catch up here in 2012 with some video. But Aaron, I think let's just start off with the fact that there are a lot of mid-major players and guys who are not from traditional power programs on the Cape Top 30. That seems like it happens a lot, but in the Top 10. You don't always have, I mean, like you said, Seth Manea, there's a lot of parallels with him and Chris Sale. And where did Seth come from? And
Sean Manea.
Sean, I'm sorry, I'm looking right at it. I don't know who Seth Manea is. But tell our readers a little bit about Sean Manea's background, and then just how good could this Indiana State team be in 2013, which was obviously pretty good in 2012 as well.
Yeah, you know, Manea is a guy that kind of emerged for them this spring, and he had a nice spring. You know, he was a weekend rotation guy, but he hadn't quite taken that leap until this summer. And I think a big reason for that was just that he was able to kind of refine the secondary stuff. I mean, the velocity is very good. The velocity, I think, jumped a little bit this summer, too, from where it was in the spring. I seem to recall he was more of a 90-92 guy in the spring, but in the summer, you know, he was routinely up to 94, 96. Slider, I think, is making progress, and he also, came up with this little kind of split changeup that he throws, and that's really the only secondary pitch he threw in the All-Star game when I saw him this summer, and it was pretty mean. I mean, it was 85, 86 miles an hour and diving down and had all kinds of movement on it. So, the development of the secondary stuff really helped him take that next step, and he's a guy that you talked with Rick Keller about him, his coach this spring, and you know he'd tell you he's got that angle, he's got the 90-92, the command of the secondary, that was really what held him back, and I think that's taken a step forward. He's got so much run and life on the fastball. He's deceptive. I mean, like Sale, he's long and got that good extension, and it makes it hard to pick the ball up. I think he's exciting, you know, and he's a great kid. And he's everyone raves about his makeup. There's a lot to like about this guy.
And that team, I mean, they won 41 games last year. They were Missouri Valley Conference champions. Are they the favorite coming into next year just because of Manea? And who else is coming back for that team? I guess Kyle Roop is coming back for them, is he not?
I think Roop is coming back.
Is Dakota Bacchus back, or is he good?
Bacchus,
he's gone.
Torgerson, I have to go back and check at that. It's a good question. I think both those guys might be back. And Bacchus is pretty good. I mean, he's your classic Friday night warrior kind of guy. And that's the thing is, Manea wasn't even their Friday night guy this year. You know, he pitched on Saturdays. They could have some really good pitching. I think Wichita State's another team to watch, though, in that conference. And Wichita ended up having five guys on our top prospect list this summer, kind of scattered around a variety of different leagues, too. They weren't all just stacked in one place. That's usually a pretty good indicator of a team that's got reason to be excited in the following year. And Virginia Tech is another team, and Notre Dame. Those are two other teams that maybe you don't expect to see high on these lists, and those guys also had a significant presence on our Summer College League list. So those are three programs, just looking at Summer Leagues as a snapshot, that you might look forward to take steps forward next year.
Yeah, UCLA and Texas A&M led all teams with 7, Wichita State with 5, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Virginia Tech with 4. That's a press release that you are just sending out today, so you can look for that on a sports information website near you, because who knows if we'll ever post our own press release. that's just the way it is. But 235 rankings on our website is also kind of amazing. Going back into the CAPE top 10, Aaron, so Manaea is part of this a strength, and you saw this in the area code games as well. If you're looking for strengths of the 2013 draft class, there's high school outfielders, but there's also left-handed pitching at the high school level. It's pretty good, and it seems like that's a strength, somewhat of a strength at the college level. You also have Tom Wendell on this list. Some other lefties scattered around these summer league lists who sound pretty interesting. Outfielders is the other one, I guess. Jim lined them up. Phil Irvin, personal cheese ball of mine. Austin Wilson, and then Aaron Judge at 3, 4, and 6. Of course, I missed Kevin Zomek among the left-handers, who's the next starting pitcher on our CAPE list. Irvin, Wilson, and Judge. It just seems like it's so odd that Irvin, the 5'11", kind of almost tweener guy physically, would be ahead of Wilson and Judge. But, I mean, the guy hits now. Present hit tool and present power kind of has to get the edge on those other two guys, doesn't he?
That's the difference maker. That's why he ended up ranking ahead of them. I mean, I think that, you know, those other guys, Judge and Wilson, looked the part more. You know, and you wonder if Wilson, can he play center field? I think that's a big question, because otherwise, is he a little bit of a tweener? I think he can play center. I think he runs pretty well. I think he's got a lot of Barrett Barnes in him. You know, it's a guy that was a sandwich pick this year, I think,
yep,
at Texas Tech.
Yep.
One of my favorite players to watch in the spring this year. I think he was really dynamic, and Irvin's kind of cut from that same cloth, but probably a little bit more hit tool. That's the difference there. I think he's better than Barnes because he's got more feel for hitting. You know, I mean, you're talking about a guy that, even though he's a little undersized, he's got premium athleticism, he's got real bat speed. He's a nice, you know, well-rounded package, and there's less risk with him than there is with Wilson and Judge, although those guys would have more upside if they can figure it out.
Aaron Judge is just so vexing to me. We had this scout comparing him physically to Giancarlo Stanton, and that's a great physical comparison, having seen Aaron Judge in person and having seen Giancarlo Stanton in person. At the same time, Giancarlo Stanton hits home runs falling out of bed, and Aaron Judge just can't seem to do it in games. He hit, 4 this spring for Fresno, none last summer in the Alaska League, 5 this summer in the Cape in a year where offense was juiced, where Tyler Horan tied the league wood bat record with 16 home runs in a single season. What do you make of Aaron Judge?
I think you nailed it. He's a little bit of an enigma. You know, he's a guy that has big raw power. You know, he homered twice this year off Mark Appel. And what did you say he ended up with in this spring,
four.
John? 4.
He hit 4. He had two home runs off Appel and 2 home runs in the other 57 games.
That's it. So, I mean, you know, he showed in the Alaska League last year that he's got big power ability. He's flashed at other times. I mean, he'll put on a show in BP. I think he can run and throw. You know, he's a classic right field profile, kind of like Wilson. But both those guys just need to continue to cut down on their swing and miss, and they need to translate that power into game action. And Wilson, I think, is really making progress with that, probably more rapidly than Judge is.
Yeah, and the thing is, just like Judge, even though they're both giant humans and they're both very good athletes, just like Judge maybe runs, at least his speed plays a little bit more than Wilson's. Wilson has a bigger arm. They're enigmatic, like you said, and Jacoby Jones is right in there in terms of enigmatic outfielder. I mean, this is a guy who played a lot of second base at LSU, was very highly regarded as like a third baseman in high school. Did he play third base as a freshman at LSU
a little bit? They started him off a little bit at third base, and then they quickly decided he was a better fit at second, so they swapped him with Hanover.
I mean, it's unusual to me that Jacoby Jones, not unusual, he's more enigmatic. At least the other guys make contact. Jones, it seems like Jones' ceiling is as good as any. I think it feels like it was pretty clear. Manaea, top pitcher, Colin Moran with that handsy, pure, natural feel for hit. The only question for him is just how much power will be there and how good of a defensive third baseman will he be. But it because like everyone feels like that guy's going to hit. But everything yeah. else after this, it almost feels like you could justify any ranking after two in the Cape.
I think you're right. I think that's a good way to put it. You know, I mean, Jacoby Jones is an up-the-middle guy who showed some real bad speed this summer. I think he's making progress as a hitter. He's starting to refine some of those rough edges. He's exciting. I think, you know, Jeff Hoffman is the guy that I was really excited about at the All-Star game.
Absolutely.
I mean, a big, you know, long, projectable right-hander with, you know, flash mid-90s heat and I think a really good breaking ball as well. He's got fuel for a change. He's only a sophomore, but that's a guy to keep an eye on for next year.
He sounds really, really interesting. In fact, I think I'd almost throw ultra-projectable on him, one of your favorite phrases.
Yeah, you're right. That would fit Hoffman, and he's already showing you present velocity, so you don't have to even project that much. And I think Colby Suggs is a guy who can probably get to the big leagues pretty quickly as a reliever. I mean, the problem is he's reliever only. He's probably not going to be a starting pitcher, which you know hurts his value compared to some of these other guys. But there's still value in a safe college reliever who throws hard and has a really good breaking ball and is fearless. So I could see him going in the first round as a quick to the big leagues kind of guy.
I tell you, that East Carolina program, I think we think Billy Godwin's did a really nice job kind of grinding through. They've had some flashes there. I don't know if they underperformed, but I think we all thought there'd be a little bit more there this year, but they had some injury issues in their pitching staff. And offensively, the last couple of years, they've kind of been very hit or miss. But between having guys like Reinheimer and McDonald being juniors next year, the excitement that has to be about Jeff Hoffman, getting DeShorn Lake back, hopefully getting a little bit more out of him. He had a pretty rough freshman season. And then getting the left-hander back, Tyler Joyner, back as a senior next year.
Yeah.
That could be a pretty intriguing ball club.
I think you're right. I think you're right, absolutely. They've got some young players. They've got a mix of veterans. I mean, I really thought they were going to be pretty good this year. I mean, because they had, they have something like eight starters back in their lineup.
They had Brandt, and they had... the catcher Zach Wright back, so they lose Wright, they lose Brandt, a couple of key seniors. They get John Wooten back as a senior. I mean, he's a nice, solid college guy. Hit 9 home runs last year.
I think he signed, didn't he, John?
John Wooten. I guess I'll double check that. I was going to tell you that Torgerson was not drafted, but Dakota Bacchus
signed
in
the ninth rounder. I saw that.
As did Indiana State catcher Jeremy Lucas in the 12th round.
And Lucas was a very good player for them, too. He's one of their key guys for sure in the middle of the lineup.
Luke did sign as a 37th rounder, so good call. But that's a blow for the Pirates.
Yeah. But nonetheless, I think you're right. I think they're a program to watch next year. And, Conference USA should be interesting. I mean, once again, you're looking at Rice in the catbird seat. And I think Southern Miss, with that great recruiting class they brought in last year,
yep.
I expect a lot of those players to take steps forward. Mason Robbins becoming a star. You know, we're seeing it now. It happened. Started to happen more in the Cape after a strong freshman year. That guy is going to be a really outstanding player next year, I think.
Real pure hitter. That guy could just flat-out hit. He could do it in high school. He may not be the most athletic joker in the world, but I think he's a little bit more athletic than people think he is, and he can really – just a pure hitter. Really, this is the state of Mississippi again. I mean, Ole Miss with a couple of guys we've already talked about, in Myers and Bobby Wall.
They had
Buchanan, who's an intriguing 2014, drafted player out of high school, big, giant donkey of a pitcher. Feels like the SEC, Aaron, is going to be the SEC again, and this might be a decent opportunity to throw in when we're talking Southeastern Conference, because Vanderbilt has a lot of guys on this list, Conrad Gregor. They got Mike Yastrzemski back, Tyler Beede, an extra year of experience. Tony Kemp is back. Kevin Domek. The way they finished last year, I think we expect the Commodores to be very good. But obviously the big news in the offseason in the Southeastern Conference was Ray Tanner's retirement, and not retirement, but leaving baseball coaching to be the athletic director at South Carolina, and the promotion of Chad Holbrook to the head coaching job there. Obviously, Chad's been an assistant coach of the year for us. I think we're both pretty confident that Chad Holbrook will be a good head coach. At the same time, can he keep South Carolina at this absurdly high level that they have reached the last three seasons with the three straight trips to the finals and two championships?
I got to imagine there's going to be a step back because they don't have the cornerstone guys anymore. I mean, Roth and Price in particular. Those are guys with the foundation. So, you know, I think that they have a lot of young talent. They're going to be very good. They're going to be competitive. I could see them, you know, they're going to be back in regionals for sure. They're going to win 40 games like they do every year. But are they going to be, you know, in the championship series again or the College World Series? I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the guys who were their key guys were Walker, Marzilli, Roth, Price. All four of those guys are gone. I know that Joey Pancake and Tanner English and Grayson Griner were starters and everyday guys this year and guys they counted on, and they're, of course, back, and they'll be sophomores and all that. But it's just going to be a fundamentally different Gamecock group without Ray Tanner and without those four core, that core four, if we could make a Yankees reference. It's going to be – are there any South Carolina guys on any of these summer league lists? I know that they don't really send their guys out to play too much anymore.
No, they didn't have any.
But I do know that there was a – I did consider a player in the Coastal Plain League got some support, Graham Saiko, I believe is how you pronounce his name, S-A-I-K-O, who was originally at Oklahoma State, then at a junior college, and now transferring into South Carolina. He got some support in the Coastal Plain League, but did not ultimately make the list. It's the Baseball America podcast with John Manuel and Aaron Fitt. Aaron, let's go on to the California Collegiate League. That's where, obviously, you're based. You did that top 10, and you wrote about some of those guys. You wrote a nice piece during the year on Daniel Mengden and Gandy Stubblefield of Texas A&M. But Cody Dixon, once again, a Sam Houston State player, a player from Texas. I think they had Texas State players who've been very successful out there with the Foresters. It feels like Bill Pintard, the Foresters, won the NBC World Series. You've got like this pipeline of talent into Texas. Yeah. Guys from the University of Texas have played there, Texas State, now Sam Houston State.
And Rice, too,
you're right. Tell us about Cody Dixon out of Santa Barbara, the Foresters, out of junior left-hander at Sam Houston State. Does he have a chance to bust into the first couple of rounds of the 2013 draft?
I think if he can continue to refine his command, then yes. I mean, that's the key for him. You know, this was a guy that was their Friday night guy starting the year at Sam Houston State, and they were very excited about his ability. And he pitched very well in the first half, and then he kind of hit some bumps in the road. You know, he couldn't throw strikes consistently, and he ended up losing his job. And by the end of the year, he was a midweek guy. So he kind of regrouped this summer, pitched very well in the NBC World Series. I mean, he's a guy with a power arm from the left side. Show you, you know, 95 or 96 at times. You know, he's got a few for three pitches. But there's some risk with this guy. Like I said, he's got to be able to iron out the mechanics a little bit and throw strikes more consistently. So, I mean, I think there's the other guys on this list are a little bit safer. I think Mengden and Stubblefield on the right side, the two Aggies, two of the seven Aggies in our Summer College League lists.
Right.
Those guys are exciting. Those guys might both be weekend starters for A&M. And, you know, I think Texas Arlington had two players on this list as well. John Beck, a little bit of a less physical but athletic, quick-armed righty for the Foresters. And Matt Shortall for San Luis Obispo, the Blues. Kind of a, you know, prototypical right field profile. If he can refine his hit tool a little bit, he's got power and he can really throw. So he's kind of an exciting guy too.
Now I know a lot about the Foresters program with Bill, Coach Pintard. Tell me a little bit about the San Luis Obispo Blues. I mean, this is, as you wrote, consistently the second best team, if not the best regular season team in this league. But now, you know, I Santa Barbara obviously kind of stands alone considering they've won back to back NBC World Series, and they've won, what, three or four in the last few years. I mean, it's kind of become the best summer ball team that goes to the NBC. It's the best program year in and year out of the leagues that send teams to the NBC World Series. But tell us a little bit about the SLO and that program. Who's building that, and how they've gotten so consistent in terms of players and talent, and then winning summer college games.
Well, Chal Fanning has done a fantastic job there, you know, former pitching coach at Missouri, and, you know, he's got some Big 12 connections that he uses. I mean, Coach Childress likes to send his guys up there. He sent Ross Stripling there a few years ago, and Stripling really developed the changeup under Chal Fanning's tutelage, and it really helped him become the dominant guy that he became. And so, you know, it's a great place to play. You're up on the coast, and, you know, people love going up there.
How's the marine layer in SLO?
The marine layer, I suspect, it probably suppresses offense like everywhere else. Although it's been a hot summer out here, it's been the marine layer probably less of a factor this year than most. But But yeah, I mean, it's you know, they do a really good job up there. And 2 years in a row now, they've tied the Foresters for the regular season championship in the Cal Collegiate League. The Foresters before that, I think, had won 9 in a row.
I think you're right. That sounds about right.
This is serious progress. That league is becoming more competitive. I think Team Vegas, you know, Buck Thomas is doing a fantastic job over there. There were a couple other guys around the league that didn't crack the top 10, but, you know, Conejo had a couple of good players, and, you know, the Academy Barons had a couple of guys, and, you know, even Orange County. You know, those teams still lag far behind Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo, but, you know, the gap is closing, and Vegas especially, they're doing a really good job out there.
And Aaron, I did the Coastal Plain League. And that's, you know, that is a league where 14 teams, that league, and it's like its 15th season. It's a big league, and it's a league that, and its alumni has got, so used to be a league where a lot of the top players were freshmen from ACC and SEC programs, but as summer college baseball has expanded and really just mushroomed, and there's so many leagues, those players, they go to the Cape more often than not now. And the, you know, the Coastal Plain League and all these other leagues either still get a few of those freshmen, or more often than not, the best players in those leagues are rising seniors, and there are a lot of those. But we went with the younger guy, the Andrew Isler, the right-hander out of Duke. Smaller, quick-arm guy, dominated the league in a short six-start stint. He had 3 complete games out of his 6 starts, although one of them, I think, was a 5- or 6-inning, you know, complete game. But he's a pretty interesting joker. But anyone on my top 10, on that Coastal Plain League top 10, jump out to you as a who really impressed you?
The two guys I really like. Well, there's several guys on this list I like, but Reed Harper at Austin Peay, I think, is he's been a fantastic college player for a few years now. He's really one of the guys that makes them go, and they've had a couple of very good teams there. You know, at
Austin
Peay,
State, yeah.
And They were in a regional final this year, I'm pretty sure, up at Eugene, didn't they?
I think it was the year before last. It was 2011 where they were at the regional final at Georgia Tech and lost to Mississippi State. But then they went back to regionals this year. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
You're right, yeah. And then they were up at Eugene, and then they gave Oregon a real run for their money, and I think were victimized by some shoddy umpiring. But
right.
Anyway, they had a good program up there, and he's really a guy that can swing the bat. And I don't know that he's a shortstop at the next level. I think you don't think he is either, but you know, but he can play. And I think Gunnar Height is an interesting sleeper, number 10 guy on this list from Forest City. You know, over College of Charleston, a guy that doesn't have, you know, huge tools, but he can run. He's athletic. Sounds like he can pick a little bit. I mean, sounds like both those guys are guys you like a little bit as well, right?
Yeah, I do. And the most interesting story there was Jake Stone, who was a league batting champion, had the game-winning hit in the NAIA World Series for Tennessee Wesleyan in the spring. And this is a guy who hits. It's a guy I talked to a couple people about him. You know, coaches in the league who'd seen him in high school. He's from Topsail Beach, North Carolina, so he played at a really small high school, a 1A school, lowest classification in the state. So he's from a coastal community. He wound up going to a relatively new junior college program, JC of the Albemarle, up in Elizabeth City, which is, again, not a program that has always had a lot of heat or a lot of tradition. So he's been under the radar for a while. Didn't have the grades to go Division I, according to my information. Wound up at Tennessee Wesleyan. But all he does is keep on hitting. He was All-State in high school. He was an All-NJCAA choice in junior college because he hit. And, you know, hit 400 at Tennessee Wesleyan, then 375 this summer. And he's not a slug. He's 6'2", 200. He's not a great athlete. You know, opposing coaches in the Coastal Plain League all said, you know, if you tried to bunt on him, he'd field the play. He was capable at third base. The game might speed up on him at the pro level. We'll see. But talk to a scout who thought that, you know, this is a guy at the very least has a good chance to hit in pro ball. Where he profiles, not sure. But the hitters hit, and this guy is hitter-ish.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a real guy to watch going forward. You know, you look at the major leagues right now, and there are a lot of, you know, there was a guy, Matt Eddy and I were just talking about, Warren. Maybe you've seen him with the Padres, left-hander. Werner. His name is Werner, left-hander. He's a sign out of Division II Indianapolis. You know, I think it was an indie ball fine for the Padres, just pitching in the big leagues right now. I never heard of him, obviously. His last name is Werner, W-E-R-N-E-R. That's a D2 guy. And I looked him up because Matt Eddy had brought him up to me. I'd never heard of him. And he was 13th in Division II in strikeouts 1 year. And the leader in the country that year, D2, was Mike Fiers, now in the big leagues with the Brewers. One of three players from the 2009 Nova Southeastern team in the major leagues. J.D. Martinez, Mike Fiers, and Miles Mikolas, who's already appeared in the big leagues with the Padres, now back in the minors. But three guys from one Division II team from 2009 in the big leagues. I mean,
amazing.
It is crazy. There are some real – there's a decent amount of small college D2 and NAIA jokers in the big leagues right now, and it's intriguing. But that league – the Coastal Plain League, the better prospects were all some low 90s velocity guys like a Chris McHugh, Andrew Brockett, who touched 95 against the USA baseball team, Dale Innes, a former Clemson recruit, 88-91 with a good curveball, touched a three here and there. And again, I mentioned East Carolina. Zach Houchins will be transferring to East Carolina, should help that infield and should help that offense. So some interesting guys in that league. Here in the Northwoods League, year in and year out, is probably the most consistent other league other than the Cape in terms of depth, certainly, and in terms of high-end prospects. You know, they're usually right there. It seems like it wasn't maybe the best year for Northwoods League prospects. It was a good year, but not up to some of its past standards. But Derek Fisher, unsigned six-runner out of high school, leads the way in that league. I think our listeners maybe know something about Derek Fisher, who's maybe another talk a little bit maybe about him and where he might fit in for that 2014 draft class, but then also maybe pick another cheese ball or two out of the Northwoods League.
I think Fisher's got a real chance to be a first-round guy in 2 years. I mean, it's what you look for, you know, in a corner outfielder. He can run and throw and hit for power. The power is really the calling card. That's the tool that's going to carry him. I think he's a right field profile, and he hit a lot more, John. He hit a lot more as a freshman than I expected to.
For a guy who had the reputation of the swing and miss that he had, I agree. I thought he would like crater, like get in the ACC and get off to a decent start, and then Ward would get around about how you pitched to him, and he'd end up hitting like 230 with a bunch of strikeouts. He didn't do that. He was fairly steady.
He hit more than UVA expected him to. I mean, I think they'll tell you going into the year they thought Mike Pompey was going to be the guy who made the bigger impact of their freshman than Fisher. They thought Fisher, you know, was very raw, needed a lot of work, and he really developed quickly, and that's a testament to his ability and his aptitude. So very good sign for his future. I think the two Big West guys right behind him are both very interesting. I think Matt Chapman, to me, is another guy that just has an innate feel for the barrel. You know, he hits. That's what he does. He plays shortstop, too, and he plays a solid shortstop. I don't think he's a big league shortstop kind of a guy, but he really can swing the bat, and he does have good actions. He's one of Rick Vanderhook's favorite players, I think, on that team. He played just about every day as a freshman. And Richard Prigitano at Long Beach State was a huge commit from Northern California. He's another guy that can really hit. He's got a nice swing, and he's got power potential. Although, you know, the numbers might not show up a whole lot at Blair Field, Long Beach has produced some power hitters, of course. We've seen that. Once they get out of Blair Field, you know, some of those guys, they can blossom. So he is a very exciting player as well. I think Casey Gillespie, Connor's little brother, further down this list, Wichita State, he's one to watch. And Jarek Studer, Texas Christian, very exciting, physical two-way player. Like both those guys a lot, too.
Yeah, Jarek Studer of the Border Cats, one of my favorite team names in summer college baseball. There are a few good ones, but the Thunder Bay Border Cats is that one stands out for me. One of my favorites. One of the things I liked about that was a very young top 10 list. The West Coast League is another league like that, Aaron, where it really feels like they're, if you want to put it in Moneyball terms, they're, their niche as a summer college league is to kind of find these rising freshmen, I should say, high school seniors, and give them a chance to get their feet wet in college baseball. And four of their top five prospects were high school seniors, rising freshmen, except for Felipe Perez, who wound up signing as an NDFA with the Diamondbacks as opposed to going to UCLA. The West Coast League really seemed like one of the more impressive leagues. I know you were familiar with several of those guys, the Hunter Virant, Caprillion, guys that you'd written about, I believe, for our draft covers this year.
Yeah, the top five guys on this list are all players that I've written about the last 2 years for the draft preview and guys I like. I mean, I was a little surprised to see Sparks, frankly, ahead of Hunter Virant and James Caprillion on this list because Sparks really struggled as a freshman at UC Irvine. But he was a top 200 guy out of high school in Huntington Beach, mostly for the power. I mean, he's a guy that profiles at third base, but he had a lot of refining to do as a hitter. His approach needed work, and he made big progress in the West Coast League, and that's why he's at the top of this list. A lot of upside with this guy.
Who do you like better, Taylor Sparks or Ryan Healy going forward?
Oh, Sparks for me.
Okay.
You know, Healy's the John Manuel cheese ball, I think.
He is.
But who was it Healy was compared to? Scott Rowland that year
Rowland.
In the Cal Collegiate?
A little
league?
High. Scott little Rowland. High. That wasn't mine.
No.
That came straight from a scout who will remain nameless.
But Sparks, I think, yeah, I mean, I feel like he's younger and just has a little more projection still, frankly. And then, you know, Virant and Caprillion and Cole Irvin, all guys that have really good feel for pitching, that's what stands out. I mean, these are guys that are all projection guys, all three of them. You know, they're not present stuff guys as much as they are projection guys. And the same is true of Perez. I mean, Perez has probably even more feel for pitching than Virant and Irvin at this point. I mean, I think I think his stuff is very well refined. I was very surprised that he signed. The reason that he went undrafted is because scouts were pretty convinced that he was going to be a very difficult sign away from UCLA. He was an academic-oriented kid, went to a small private high school out here in Orange County, people just thought that he was going to go to school and give the Diamondbacks credit. Their scouting staff did a fantastic job staying on this guy. They had some extra money that they didn't spend in their bonus pool, and they were able to get him done for a lot less than people expected. It was still a good chunk of change, but great job of that scouting staff.
Yeah, that was a surprise. I mean, does that affect UCLA, you think, any for 2013? It doesn't seem like it does. I mean, you know, Plutko's back. Dave Berg is back.
He might not have pitched much this year, and that might be one reason he decided to sign. I mean, they might have realized, hey, where am I gonna fit in when they've got Plutko, Vander Tighe, Zach Weiss, David Berg,
Hunter Virant.
Now you got Virant and Caprillion in there. I mean, where do I fit in? Maybe that's one reason that they were able to get him. But
that's what I wondered. I wonder if he went to that West Coast League and saw those other guys. I mean, he knew those other guys, but then he was like, wait a minute. If you really do the math, it wouldn't be a real challenge for him to pitch at all as a freshman, and it wouldn't be handed to him as a sophomore. And when you get $400,000 in pro ball, innings are handed to you. You will pitch. You might be getting rocked, but if you don't go over 30 pitches an inning, that organization is going to send you out there until you get to your pitch count, and then they'll take you out when you're in the South Atlantic League. And so it's a little bit different. Obviously in college baseball where there's a lot more emphasis on winning.
Exactly. That's a priority. I mean, you develop talent, but it's a means to an end. You develop talent so that you can, A, recruit more talent, and B, so that you can win in 2 or 3 years. Whereas in pro ball, your objective in the minor leagues is to develop talent, period. So it's just a different animal. But I think this list is exciting. I like this list a lot.
Me too.
I was surprised to see the comment from the scout that Connor had in his intro that said they thought it was just kind of an average year in the West Coast League. I thought it was a pretty good year. I mean, I like this list quite a bit. Even Tommy Eshelman, the number 10 guy, is an interesting joker, you'd say. going to Cal State Fullerton. I like this Cal State Fullerton recruiting class, with the kid Justin Garza, I think is going to be a superstar in college. I mean, talking about a 5'10", 5'11", I mean, might not even be that tall. He might be shorter than that. He's small, but he's electric. He'll show you 94. He's not on any of these lists, so I'm veering off topic. But the point is,
that's
Fullerton,
okay.
Fullerton, I think, did a good job with the recruiting out here this year. They could be pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously a big kind of, we're going back to the beginning of the podcast, but I mean, one of the big question marks for them will be Michael Lorenzen.
Yeah.
I hope he has some confidence after this summer because he didn't hit with the USA team, lost his job, went to the Cape, didn't hit there either. And he had a pretty forgettable summer. There have been a lot of players who've had forgettable summers and have come back. You know, I'm looking at guys like Drew Meyer from the past or Reese Havens had a bad summer in the Cape one year and still came back and had a great college junior season. So you don't have to tear it up in the summer, but it doesn't hurt. Speaking of tearing it up in the summer, Aaron, did anybody in summer college baseball, we don't do a summer college player of the year anymore. We used to. I think it's just kind of an oxymoron to say summer college player of the year. But if we chose one just based on pure season and don't, even if you factor in a little bit quality of opposition, quality of play, does anybody rule summer college baseball more than Hunter Renfro, the Mississippi State all-time cheese ball who got his number retired in the Clark Griffin in the Cal Ripken League this summer?
Yeah, that was something else. What did he finish with? 19 home runs between the regular season and the postseason.
Yeah.
With a wood bat. I mean, that's incredible. I know that those are tiny little ballparks they play in that league, and the balls were probably juiced. But that's a lot of home runs. And this guy's got three plus tools right now.
I think he has 3 sevens, Aaron. I really do. I think he's a seven.
I think he's only a six runner.
You're right. 4-1 from the right side is a six runner. But he's a six runner. He's a seven thrower, and
you're right.
It's like a seven raw power.
That's a good point.
It might be eight raw power because he hits them far.
And you know, I think he's found a home in the outfield. And that was the problem. Part of the problem his freshman year was, you know, is he a catcher? Is he a right-handed pitcher? You know, what is he? And he was just so raw in every facet that it took some time for him to figure it out.
And he still is. And that rawness to the hitting tools, why he's not our number one guy in the Ripken League. He's
right
behind K.J. Hockaday at Maryland and Mike Zagunas of Virginia Tech. And both those guys have some real hitting polish, especially Hockaday.
Yep.
And then Zagunas has a chance to stay behind the plate. So, to me, any of these three guys could have been one, two, or three. You put them in a pot. You could stir those guys. So, if you want the upside guy, you'd go Renfro. If you want a little more polished bat, Hockaday and Zagunas, and they also play in the dirt or behind the plate. So, you know, I could see why those guys get the ranking they do. But in a year, or in a world where college prospects there aren't that many guys with big tools in college baseball. Is there anybody else in college baseball, Aaron, who's got 2 sevens and a six who are position players like Renfro?
I think you could maybe throw
Wilson maybe or Judge.
Austin Wilson or Chris Bryant or Aaron Judge. I mean, Chris Bryant, you know, he's probably got seven raw power, seven arm. He's probably a 50 runner underway. He's not a 60, so he didn't quite measure up to Renfro, but he's also more advanced as a hitter.
No doubt. But when we're putting a list together, we're putting our top 100 college, those right fielders, the Judge, Wilson, Bryant, probably going to be a future right fielder. We're lining up those guys and some of the other outfielders. Renfro is going to be right in that mix because tools-wise, if he has any kind of junior season in the SEC with those tools, somebody's going to bite very high in next year's draft on him.
And like I was saying, I just think that now that he's got a home in the outfield, I think it has allowed him to really kind of blossom. And you know, I made my little Southeastern Conference swing this spring, and I saw one game in Starkville on a Sunday, and Renfro was playing center field because C.T. Bradford was hurt. And it was my first look at Renfro in the outfield, and, you know, lo and behold, he makes a spectacular play where he goes back and, you know, times the ball perfectly and leaps up and steals a home run, brings it back over the fence. I think it was Matt Snyder who hit that ball. So, you know, I mean, it was just a quick look, but I came away saying, wow, I mean, this guy, he's got a chance out there. I mean, you could see the kind of athlete that he is. I mean, I feel like he's kind of a Jim Edmonds body type. You know, he's maybe a better runner than Edmonds. He's a right-handed hitter, but, you know, I think he can be that kind of a player out there if those instincts continue to come.
Yeah, he's. I don't know what kind of player he is. I mean, I like the body comp there. I always think of Jim Edmonds drawing a lot of walks. I don't know that Hunter Renfrow is ever gonna have that kind of feel for hit. But I mean, to me, he's almost like a Preston Wilson type, a guy who might be a center fielder at the next level. If he's a six runner and if he can play center field, he's almost. I know he doesn't run. I mean, Drew Stubbs is an eight runner, but he might wind up a Drew Stubbs type. Not as much run, but big power.
It's a different body type, but I think he could be that kind of a player. I think that's a good call. I think the tool grades might end up being pretty similar, with the exception of, like you said, Stubbs is a much better runner. And I just think I think of Stubbs. I think of he's more lanky, more leverage,
right. A leaner athlete. But this guy's quick twitch. He is, obviously, Hunter Renfrow, to me, is like the most intriguing player in college baseball because the tools and the upside are so huge, and he is so raw, and the hit tool is a giant question mark. And I'm very intrigued by his upside and what he can do. I don't know if there's a Hunter Renfrow caliber cheese ball for you on any of these other summer league lists, seeing as how my Hunter Renfrow cheese ball fandom is quite high. Anybody approach that for you, Fitzy?
Taking a quick peek over these lists, see who jumps out at me. I'll just say this: if I'm picking a summer college player of the year and it's not Hunter Renfrow, I think I probably would take this guy anyway. I think it'd be Sean Manaea. Just because
I think he would probably
doing what he did,
because he really dominated.
He dominated in the Cape in an incredible hitter's year. That's the guy, I think. And as far as a cheese ball, a pick to click, I mean,
how about Nigel Nootbaar? I know you like that name.
Nigel Nootbaar. I am a big Nigel Nootbaar fan. I like Aaron Brown toward the back of Jim's Cape list. If I had to pick a guy
good
out.
Pick.
Left-handed pitcher / outfielder. Really, I really liked him as an outfielder last year. But I always thought he had a chance as a pitcher as well. And even in high school, there were scouts who liked him both ways. The consensus had him as a better prospect, and it's kind of a right field type. But the guy's a great athlete. He's got a fast arm, and he'll show you a really good slider, and run the fastball up to 93, 94. He's exciting. I think he's one of those guys who could be a legit prospect from either side.
That's a good call. You have been an Aaron Brown proponent for a couple of years here. Real quick, a couple of these older leagues: Alaska League, Jayhawk League, Valley League. These leagues have been around a long time. Felt like it was a little bit better year than usual in the Jayhawk League, a little more raw, prospecty. Maybe it was just a better job by our by our reporters than when I did the Jayhawk League, finding the younger guys. Anyone from those leagues jump out to you? The Alaska League seemed pretty interesting with Braden Shipley, at the top. And, of course, some projectable arms in Freeland, Nootbaar, and Tickle.
Yeah, it's a good group of arms. I think Trey Tickle, especially the guy that I think could have a big year at TCU. I think Nootbaar is going to have a good year at USC also. I mean, they've got some holes to fill in that rotation now. Now that Andrew Triggs is gone and Ben Mount is gone and the left-hander Tarpley is transferred, big loss for them. I think Nootbaar could be a key piece that weekend rotation. Certainly, got to watch there.
It is a big loss for them. Stephen Tarpley, I believe, is his first name, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Transferred to what, a junior college in Arizona?
Is that a junior college? I think it is Arizona, yeah.
I think he transferred to junior. I'm pretty sure he's junior college and draft eligible for 2013. So that's a loss for the Trojans, who, of course, could use some good breaks. But Kyle Freeland, again, from the state of Indiana, not Indiana State. But another guy just sounds really fascinating to me. I mean, led the team in strikeouts as a freshman, 35 scoreless innings this summer. And then Nootbaar, who comes from obviously his uncle's or his grandfather's name is on the building. Tickle. Those are some really, that seems like a good year in the Alaska League. Some real upside arms like that.
And I'll tell you where else it was a good league, and another old league is the Atlantic Collegiate Baseball League.
Yeah.
I'm very intrigued by the two Peterson twins at Temple, guy that
Absolutely.
I'd like to read more about here. You get the left-hander Patrick and the righty Eric ranking 4 and 5 back-to-back on this list. Those guys are exciting.
They are. That's a good call. That's a really neat-sounding group of prospects for that league, from the Savannah State kid, Kyle McGowan, to the twins, like you mentioned, and then a guy that I think maybe our listeners might be more familiar with, Steve Goldstein. We all saw with Stony Brook. I mean, that guy's a really solid college player, and you could definitely you could see Steve Goldstein at least being a double A, triple A, regular, maybe an up and down guy as a kind of a fourth outfield grinder type.
He'll move over to center field this year and replace Travis Jankowski and kind of showcase his athleticism a little bit. And then there's Brenton Allen, who's really an X factor. I mean, a guy that I think he was a sixth round pick out of high school, just based on his tools. A Phillies draft, you know, they like their tools guys, but very raw. Has barely played in 2 years because how are you going to play in the outfield at UCLA with Kiefer and Amaral and Jelilich out there? There's no room. Well, those guys are gone now, so there's room. And I think, you know, we had Eric Filius Snyder on one of these lists also, and Brenton Allen. Those guys could be good players, but they took steps forward this spring. Allen's got bat speed and power. He can run a little bit, but the key question is, can the approach continue to improve? Definitely got to watch.
Yeah, ninth rounder out of high school. I mean, 6'2", 205 out of high school. Sounds like a little bit bigger than that. Runs well now. I mean, he sounds really, really interesting. So I'm glad you brought that up because that's a good way to end the podcast, Aaron, is that feels like summer college baseball is watered down, and I feel like it is in some ways because there are just too many leagues. I mean, I shouldn't say too many, but there are just so many. There's been such an explosion in the volume of leagues that the expansion has led to some dilution of talent. And when that happens, offense ticks up. Then you had the ball controversy that you've written about. We've all, I think, written a little bit about it, with these diamond balls that these leagues use that were just saying it seemed like the quality of the ball was not very high and the ball really jumped. So so the expansion and the ball were the two big reasons why offense jumped this summer. But at the same time, I feel like you still can look around and find talent in all these leagues.
That's right. And you know, this is a worthwhile exercise. And our fleet of reporters, I thought, did a really good job this year. And I thought the quality of our reports was very high. And I hope our readers enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. I'm always a little skeptical of summer ball. But then the thing is, you read all these reports and you just get juiced for it. So we definitely need to give credit where it's due. We have past interns like Bubba Brown, Mike Kanan, Mike LaMare. Who am I leaving out from the past interns? Matt Foreman, hello. Granddaddy of them all. And then current interns, Andrew Krause. Well, I guess all now former because they've all done except for Andrew Krause. Clint Longenecker. John Sandberg did a league top 30, did he not? League top 10?
He started to, but no, he did not.
He wound up, yeah, because he did leave early. Doggone Notre Dame and their academics. John had to go back to school early. But Pat Hickey. So we had a raft of current and past interns doing summer college league lists and coordinating it all for us, of course, none other than Aaron Fitt, doing a great job.
And Peter Wardell, we should mention, too, did the Florida League and also provided most of that video for the Cape Top 10. And Mike Kanan provided some of that video as well. Those guys, big help this summer.
Yeah, the video in the Cape was something different for us, and you kind of wonder why we haven't had in the past. The answer has always been resources, but that was really neat for us to have Peter up there. And, you know, just like you said, a real team effort. Now, what's next for you on the college front, Aaron? What do our college readers and listeners have to look forward to next, now that summer college baseball is behind us?
Next big project in the horizon is our annual recruiting class rankings, which generally come out, I think, beginning of October.
Yeah.
So already starting to work on those. We'll spend most of September trying to hammer that out and call as many scouts and coaches as I can and get a feel for who the best classes are that have now arrived on campus in colleges across the country.
The only time I ever want to sing Carly Simon is when you talk about that, because nobody does it better. Nobody does it quite as good as you, Aaron. You're the best.
Thanks, Johnny.
Great way to end the podcast. Silence. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll talk to you next time on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.